Shabbat Shalom. Back in the day, when I was a PhD student in Bible, I had the occasion to study the German theologian and scholar Gerhard von Rad, who passed away in 1971. Von Rad was a pioneer in a field of biblical scholarship called form criticism, and his most famous article bore the scintillating title, The Form Critical Problem of the Hexateuch. If you've never heard of von Rad, or know what form criticism, or for that matter, the Hexateuch is, then you're in good company, so allow me to try to explain it in two or three sentences. As a student of Bible, von Rad was deeply interested in the question of how the Bible, from the story of creation to the entry of the promised land, took shape. For him, the final form of the Bible not being the five books, what we call the Pentateuch, but the five books plus the book of Joshua, thus making the Hexateuch. The Hexateuch, von Rad believed, was a literary expansion upon an ancient kernel of a story, a kernel which we find as we open up this week's Torah reading. Von Rad argued that the core creedal narrative upon which the entire Bible is based are the opening lines of this week's Parsha Ki Tavo, the liturgical declaration offered by the ancient Israelite pilgrim as he offered the first fruits in the temple, as Max taught us, Arami Oved Avi, my father was a wandering Aramean. It goes on, he went down to Egypt and sojourned there, but there he became a great nation. The Egyptians dealt harshly with us and oppressed us. We cried out to the Lord, and the Lord heard our pleas and saw our plight, our misery. And the Lord freed us from Egypt by a mighty hand, by an outstretched arm and awesome power. He brought us to this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. Wherefore I now bring the first fruits of the soil which you, O Lord, have given me. Von Rad used the term Heilsgeschichte, sacred or hallowed history, to describe these few verses, a short recitation, which is also in the Passover Haggadah, significant both for what it includes and what it does not, the most ancient sacred rendition of Israelite history. And from these few verses, the Bible took its shape, story after story, strand after strand, until the Bible took its final form. 4.5 verses, not just the urtext of all of biblical literature, but the prism by which the ancient Israelite viewed him or herself. These verses encapsulating ancient Israel's self-understanding. So here's my question. If you had to distill your story, your biography, in just a few short sentences, what would you say? What would they be? It's an interesting question to consider, always, but especially at this time of year. What are the key elements by which you present yourself to the world, the verses that reflect your self-understanding? What would you leave in? What would you leave out? For me, I imagine I would say, and I'll try it out, something to the effect of, I'm the grandson of a pulpit rabbi and one of four children. I married a woman, also one of four children, and the two of us are now raising four children together. Though I almost became an academic, like my grandfather before me, I am now privileged to serve a congregation and the Jewish people. I won't ask you to share your story aloud, although it would be a fascinating exercise. The real question, of course, is what that self-constructed narrative says about you. Reflecting on my mini self-narrative, it's as interesting for what's in it as what's not. Why do I begin with one grandfather and not the other? Why focus on the number of children in my family of origin and my present family? Of all of Debbie's many-fold qualities, why focus on the number of her siblings? Why point out that I almost became one thing but chose to become another? Why did I leave out the fact that my father is a physician? And in college, I was originally pre-med until that fateful day that I dropped organic chemistry. Maybe because the story I share is neat and tidy and a little bit self-serving, my present and hoped-for future mirroring my past and the generations gone by. Were I to be a therapist or sitting in a therapist's office, someone could tell me exactly why my Heilsgeschichte is what it is. Moreover, I imagine what I just shared is but one of many possible self-narratives, the one I just told being the one that I can share while I'm standing in a pulpit in front of my congregants. There may be others that I have, all depending on audience, mood, or moment in life. In her book, The Power of Meaning, Emily Smith goes to great lengths to explain the power of stories that we tell about ourselves. As human beings, we all have a storytelling impulse, a deep-seated need to impose order on our world, around and especially on our own lives. Storytelling, wrote Mary Cathy Bateson, is fundamental to the human search for meaning. We would rather not think that the events of our lives are either random or meaningless, and so we craft a tale. How this led to that, that led to this. Not so much because it was all foretold or preordained, but that it all has meaning. There are, despite what some people say, objective facts. But the act of weaving those facts together, the construction of our personal myth, is anything but an objective process. A million conscious and unconscious choices we make to highlight conditions or traditions we've inherited, challenges we've overcome, and sufferings we've endured. Will that painful breakup come to define me? Will that illness forever change my outlook? Will that hard-won victory hardwire me for success in the future? Maybe, but maybe not. It's a choice we make as we weave the tale of our lives. No different than the Israelite of old, the narrative identities we construct become the prisms by which we see the world, and most importantly, ourselves. Towards the end of this week's Torah reading, there's a fascinating announcement by God as Moses is wrapping up his charge to the Israelites just prior to them entering the promised land. You've seen all that the Lord did before your eyes in the land of Egypt, Moses announces. Yet to this day, the Lord has not given you a heart to understand, lev ladat, or eyes to see, or ears to hear. The rabbinic commentaries have a field day on this verse. Of course, the Israelites had hearts and eyes and ears. So what does it mean that only now they actually have them? Perhaps, as some commentators note, only now at the end of their desert sojourn do the Israelites demonstrate appreciation for the miracles performed on their behalf. I think the answer is even more basic. In the midst of the miracles and the setbacks and the desert wanderings, Israel wasn't ready yet to absorb, to integrate, to assimilate all that was taking place. They needed time and maybe a bit of distance. Here and now, Moses is calling on them to be responsible for the act of crafting their self-narrative. This was the final stage of their emotional development as a people before they could enter the next chapter, in their case, the Promised Land. It is a charge for Moses. Don't just be passive bystanders to the events of your life. Use your eyes, your ears, and most of all, your heart. Recognize the responsibility and the opportunity that comes with being the author of your life story. And so too with all of us today. We are but days away from the beginning of the new year. And if there is one image associated with Rosh Hashanah, one constant visual image is that of a book, a narrative, the book of life. Leshana Tova Tikatevu, we will say to each other, may you be inscribed in the book of life. Besefer Chaim Bracha V'Shalom, we will chant, into the book of life for blessing and peace. More often than not, we think of this book as being the divine ledger into which our names, please God, will be inscribed. That may be true, but today I would ask you to consider another possibility, the possibility that the author about whom we are speaking is not the good Lord above, but you and me, all of us, and the stories we are knowing and unknowingly authoring. The year gone by has extended to each of us our fair share of joys and sorrows, successes and setbacks. It's inevitable, and much of the time, it's beyond our control. Those are the objective facts. But let me ask you the question of the day. How have you made meaning of those facts? Have you learned and grown from those experiences? Or have you turned yourself into a victim, a person with a perpetually wounded sensibility? You've been let down by another person, a colleague who turned out not to be so collegial, a partner who turned out to be less than you had hoped. Welcome to the club. Today, let me ask you, are you still stuck in that moment? Are you still stewing in that sting? Are you sitting around just waiting for the next betrayal? Or have you licked your wounds, dusted yourself off, learned from the experience, and done what we all need to do, which is to move on? The holidays aren't here to affirm the narratives we've constructed for ourselves. The holidays are here to challenge them, and when necessary, to overturn them. There are in this room people with loved ones with whom we do not speak, people refusing to reconcile. We can become so convinced of the rightness of our story that we refuse to entertain the possibility that our story is only one side of the story. Lest we forget, the fatal flaw of Pharaoh and so many other tragic biblical figures was that he hardened his heart. He refused to see the possibility that his reality could change. The holidays are a wake-up call, reminding us that it is we who are the authors of our stories, empowered but also responsible. Neither our stories nor our hearts should be set in stone. They can be written, and then they can be rewritten. Our lives, not any one single story, but a palimpsest containing traces of an ever-renewed self-understanding. That is the promise. That is the challenge of the coming holidays. We allow our loved ones and we demand of ourselves the responsibilities that come with taking authority over the books of our lives. The other night, someone asked me whether or not, with a week and a half left before Rosh Hashanah, it was appropriate to say, Lashana Tova Tikatevu, may you be written into the book of life for a good year. Well, if you're asking about God's book of life, then I suppose it is a bit early. But if you're talking about your book of life, the one that you are writing, the prism of your self-understanding, then yes, absolutely, on this day and in the days ahead, say Lashana Tova Tikatevu. Take personal agency for your role as the author of your life story. Have a heart to understand, eyes to see, and ears to hear. Take seriously the fact that the authorial choices you make will, in no small part, determine your story. And yes, may you write and be written for a year of good. Now is the time to demonstrate the requisite boldness of character to tell a different tale in the year and the years to come. May we all have the courage of heart to do so in the awesome days ahead. Shabbat Shalom.